Hey, everybody. Movie retrospective time.
Yeah.
Talking about Brian De Palma.
Yeah.
Zach will be excited.
Yeah. I tell you what, I'm going to be straight up honest with you people. Fucking, I was watching this movie. Hold on, let me open this up. I was watching this, and I was really getting into it. I was enjoying it, and I fucking fell asleep.
I know you were snoring. I
fell asleep about halfway into it, but I couldn't help it. I was fucking tired. And it's shot really well.
This is a gorgeous-looking movie. Yeah. I had forgotten. I actually saw this movie. It's called Blowout, by the way. It came out in 1981.
Yeah.
I actually saw this on cable when I was in my teens or 20s, and I remembered really liking it. Like, I remembered a lot of the, you know, opening sequence. Or the opening sequences, like the first act of the movie, but I couldn't, like, remember what had happened in it, so I'd been wanting to, like, rewatch it. And I feel like it's the movie that Brian De Palma made in between Dress to Kill and Scarface. So Scarface was after this one, and then Dress to Kill was before this one. And I feel like it's one that when people talk about, like, the best Brian De Palma movies, like, particularly even if they're just talking about, like, his thrillers, I kind of feel like it gets a little bit ignored, even though, I mean, they just put out a Criterion Collection one, I think, like this year or last year or something like that. And actually, I went back and there have been like a lot of retrospective reviews of it, particularly I think last year because it was the 40th anniversary, where a lot of critics are like reassessing it. I mean, it got good critical reviews at the time, but like it didn't really do that well at the box office. So I kind of feel like a lot of people are reassessing it and being like, man, this is like one of De Palma's like best movies. And I have to say, I haven't seen all of his movies, admittedly, but this is a damn good one. It's like way, way better than I remembered.
Yeah, it's a low budget movie, but it's real well crafted. It's shot real well. It just goes to show you that if you give a shit, you know, and you're talented, you don't need any money to make a good movie.
I mean, $18 million, that's not nothing, but
in the scope of studios, that's not that much.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks a lot better than $18 million. And it's got the girl from RoboCop 1.
Nancy,
you know,
Allen. She was actually married to Brian De Palma at the time that this movie came out. Yeah,
and she plays a role in there.
He worked with her a lot.
Yeah, and then it's got, what's his name?
John Travolta's in it.
Probably pre-Scientology. Probably before he was involved in Scientology.
Hard to say. Like I said, this was 81. I don't remember when he got into it.
I think it was later.
It might have been later. He's great in this, and honestly, I think this is one of his best roles.
Yeah, he's good in it.
He's like, it's one of his dramatic roles, you know what I mean, which you don't really see a lot. Maybe nowadays you do. I don't know. I haven't seen like a lot of his movies. But I do kind of feel like prior to this, you know, he had been in Greece, and he'd been in kind of like, what was the disco movie? He'd been
Saturday
in that, like Saturday Night Fever. Been in that, yeah, which are good movies. Yeah. I'm just saying that this is like a little bit of a different role for him, and I thought he just like knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, he plays a veteran, a guy who came out of the Army. I forgot what he did in the Army.
He's like communications. Because he's just like,
he was a communications whiz. He stayed stateside. And then later on, he ended up becoming a sound technician for studios making cheap movies, and he sound records as, I guess, like an assassination attempt.
Well, at first, it's an assassination because it
does
works
kill
like,
him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, because what ends up happening, okay, so the idea for this movie actually came from, there was a movie by Michelangelo Antonioni called Blow Up, which was about a guy who was a fashion photographer, I think. It's been a long time since I've seen it. But it was a fashion photographer who maybe accidentally, like, captured a murder, like, while he was doing a fashion shoot. And then there was the other movie who... Was it Francis Ford Coppola or Martin Scorsese? I can't remember. Mm-hmm. The Conversation that had Gene Hackman in it, where it was, like, a guy who was, like, he bugged people and, like, listened. And then there was, like, a plot uncovered.
I don't think I saw that one.
So it's kind of, like... I've been wanting to, like, do a review on that one, too, because that one's also really good. And I think they have that on HBO Max, actually, where this one is, too. Like, if you want to watch it, it's on HBO
Max. This movie is kind of like what this movie is to Brian De Palma is kind of what The Hand is to Oliver Stone. Like, people don't know that the Hand is an Oliver Stone movie, but that's another kind of lower budget, real fucking good movie, Michael Caine. But this is kind of like as good. To me, I think this is kind of like De Palma's version of, like, The Hand, a sleeper.
Yeah, well, like I said, well, I mean, when you bring up Brian De Palma, it's like everybody talks about Carrie or Scarface or Dress to Kill or, like, a lot of... I mean, he made so many good movies, which I guess it's understandable. But then I kind of feel like this one gets a little bit lost in the shuffle, which, like I said, I guess because he made so many good movies, so it's, like, easy to forget, like, about some of the other ones. But honestly, I think this might be... I don't know. I haven't seen Dress to Kill in a long time, and I'd kind of, like, want to rewatch that. But I kind of... think I might like this just as good. I think this is just as good, but I don't know. Like I said, I haven't seen Dress to Kill in a long time. So, yeah, we were saying, like, Nancy Allen is in this. Yeah, she worked with him a lot. She was also in, she was in Carrie, too, wasn't she? And she was in, like, a couple of his other movies. And this also has John Lithgow in it, who I think was also in a bunch of his other movies, and Dennis Franz, who... This was prior to, because I feel like Hill Street Blues started, he was in Hill Street Blues, right? And I kind of feel like that started right around the same time. But, yeah. So, like I said, this is kind of like an amalgamation of Antonioni's blow up and The Conversation. What it is John Travolta plays a guy named Jack. And he, you know, he has a history, which you kind of, like, find out about later. But he's a sound guy, like a sound designer, sound technician, whatever. And he works for this studio, and they're doing these really, really cheesy, you know, B-horror movies. You know, some of which, it's funny because one of the movies in the movie is called Bordello of Blood. And I'm like, oh my God, we actually have that movie now.
Yeah.
And I wondered, the makers, like the Tales from the Crypt, Bordello of Blood is like, I wonder if they were making direct reference to that. I would imagine.
Sure. Yeah.
But
they all were in the same scene.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So I kind of feel like the movie that he's working on at the beginning of this movie, I think is called Coed Frenzy, now that I'm thinking about
Coed
it.
Sounds like a porn film.
Well, that's what's funny about it is that this movie actually opens, like, it's you know, they do the little logos and all that stuff, and it opens on what appears to be a cheesy horror movie, like a Halloween knockoff or something like that, where there's all these nubile naked
some shit like that.
Yeah, like I said, so it's all these kind of like naked women like jumping up and down partying like in a thing while somebody is like doing the Steadicam like outside like watching them.
Yeah, and I'm going like, yeah, right, like that happens. Girls just getting their underwear and start dancing with each other.
Bouncing up
and I realized that, oh, they're fucking with us. This is a movie.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think the beginning of this is so brilliant, because you could be forgiven for thinking, because, I mean, you know, De Palma had made horror movies before, obviously, and he did actually start Carrie with that slow motion shot, like, through the girl's locker room. So you could, for a second, you're probably thinking, like, oh, is he going back to horror? Oh, wait, this is not good. Like, this, am I about to be, like, is he, like, has he lost his mojo?
He's trolling.
And then, so that goes on for, like, three or 4 minutes, and you're just like, oh, my God, this is, like, a horrible. And then, like, the funny part comes when, like, there's this naked lady in the shower, and then, like, the killer comes up to her, and she screams, and it is, like, the stupidest sounding scream ever.
Yeah.
And then they pull back, and John Travolta is just like, that is the worst fucking scream ever. Yeah. And so they establish this is the guy that's working on this movie that's doing the sound effects, and he's like, we gotta, like, dub over that scream, because that's ridiculous.
So it already pulled me in early on. You know what I mean? I said, this is a cool movie. And then they did a bunch of split screen stuff that was really good.
Yeah, he's always doing that kind of stuff, which I think is like it's really effectively used.
Yeah, where you got a wheel going by with a bullet going through it, and then in the foreground you got John Travolta with his headphones listening to it happening.
Like, it sounds like what's going on in his head.
Yeah, and the wheels going by, and you're like, oh, wow, it's pretty neat.
Yeah, visually, this is a gorgeous, gorgeous
movie. And every time they show him, like, he's talking to his girlfriend in a damn hotel room, the establishing shots, it's like these old 80s hotel, 70s and 80s hotels that would be on a damn urban exploration video nowadays, and it's still usable. It's kind of weird. It's like going back in time, you know? And then you see the front of the hotel, the interior and the front of the car all happening at the same time, and I'm going, De Palma's a fucking master at shooting these camera angles.
I know.
I mean, anybody else just would have done a frontal boring shot. He's trying to do shot composition and establish shit the right way. So it's... Already early on in the movie, it's punching above its weight. I saw the beginning and I saw the end. I fell asleep in the middle.
And then,
the movie's fault. It was my fault. I was tired.
And then by the time he woke up and he was just kind of like, wait, who's there? And I was just like, it's too complicated.
Yeah, it's like, all right. So I just did an analysis of the shot compositions and the fucking score and everything that was going on and the acting, I could tell it was a high quality movie. I just missed the middle part of it, which is fucking, that's where all the
that's
movie
where
happened.
All the movie happened. So, like, yeah, and then I was like, kind of like, because yeah. I know he has a tendency to like fall asleep or like not pay attention,
yeah,
and then like he wants me to explain it, and I'm just like, but I'm trying to watch it, I don't want to explain it. But yeah. So I was like, just watch it again or read a plot synopsis.
Kind of lull me to sleep sometimes, you know, work, you know, just does.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah. Sometimes in the evening. I mean, it happens to me, too. And it's like I said, it's usually no ding against the movie. Like, oh, the movie's so boring, it put me to sleep.
No.
Sometimes I'm just really, really tired.
Right.
And I want to stay awake and watch it, but I can't. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So, so John Travolta's character, who, like, did I mention that his name is Jack? Okay. His name is Jack. And he works on these movies. And because they're working on this movie and the scream is terrible, this girl does, and they have to find another one. And then, like, the guy or the producer or the director or whatever, he's just like, man, we've been using, like, these canned sound effects, like the wind and glass breaking and shit like that. Why don't you go, like, record some new shit? So he goes out to, this was all shot in Philadelphia, by the way. And he goes out to, like, some bridge, and I'm sure it's, if you live in Philadelphia, you know what bridge it is, but he's out there, like, filming night sounds, like wind and owls and crap like that. And while he's out there filming noise, or he's not filming, obviously, but he's recording noise. Yeah, he's recording noise with, like, the big
shotgun
long,
mics and stuff.
Yeah, the shotgun mic. So he's recording all the noise, and he hears a car approaching, and the car actually goes, like, veers off the bridge and into the creek or lake or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, and you hear, I guess, like a tire blowout, kind of.
Yeah, hence why the movie is called Blowout.
Yeah, but there's more to it. He also realizes later on that there's a shot, that somebody shot that tire out.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Like, right. So he jumps, he's like, Jesus Christ, and then, like, he jumps in there, and he sees that the guy who was driving, like, the guy at the wheel is obviously already dead, but there's still a girl, like, in the back, and she's still alive, and she's like, holy shit, like, get me out of here. So he's actually able to rescue her and takes her to the hospital. Now, once he gets to the hospital, he finds out that the girl that he rescued, Sally, like, she's gonna be okay, but the guy that was driving the car was this real big muckety-muck governor who was actually just going to announce his candidacy for president. And so he goes back and he's listening to the sounds that he recorded, like, later on. And he's like, immediately when he's at the hospital, he's already getting some blowback from the cops. They're like, oh, do you know who that is? And he's just like, I don't know, a dead guy. And he's just like, oh, it's that governor, whatever the hell his name was. And he's like, oh, shit, you know, that's something. And he tells the cops, he's like, I'm pretty sure, like, I heard something before the tire blew out. Like, I heard something that maybe sounded like a gunshot, so I don't know if it was an accident. They're like, no, it's just an accident, it's fine. And then they're telling him, hey, can you just, like, conveniently forget that that woman was in the car because she is, you know, like a prostitute or whatever. I mean, she's not exactly that, like, as you find out later, but they're like, and we don't really want his family to think that he was, like, getting a hand job or whatever the hell was going on, like, during the accident. So can you just, like, forget? And he's just like, yeah, but she was in the car. Like, that's the truth. So why do you... He's like, yeah, but we don't want to upset his wife, blah, blah, blah.
He didn't get it.
Yeah. So he was just kind of like, all right, whatever. And like I said, him and Sally, they kind of, like, strike up a friendship. Now, when he's listening back to the recording that he made, he is absolutely positive that he's like, I can hear the tire blowing out, but he's like, before that, there was a gunshot. He's like, and I'm sure that was a gunshot. I'm a sound guy. I hear gunshots. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then the reenactment, the shot composition with him listening and the tire going by. For the early 80s, you know, before CG, it was quite a cool effect.
This has so many great shots in it.
Right, and it makes me wonder how much it cost to get them to do that, how much it cost De Palma to do that, or how did he even come up with that idea? I mean, they were doing split-screen stuff, but it wasn't really split-screen. It looked like one image kind of laid over and superimposed on another one, and they were at different levels. It looked like it was like a decades ahead, maybe a decade ahead of what you would normally see. You didn't see that kind of shit.
Yeah, it's almost like a collage. 90s. It's like a compositional kind of shot.
Moving collage.
I think there's a word for that, but I can't remember what it is at the moment.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing that until the 90s.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, where, like, his face is, like, way up in the foreground.
Up in the foreground.
And then in the background,
back,
there's, like, layers of, like, stuff that's going on in his head.
Right.
But, yeah, and, well, the cool thing about it is that he doesn't really use those kind of shots or, like, the split-screen composition just as, like, showing off or, hey, look how neat this looks, which it does, but...
Part of storytelling.
Yeah, he also uses it as a storytelling device because he's, like, giving you... Because there's a really great shot near the beginning of this where they establish who the governor dude is. Is, like, before he gets killed, and they do it in a split screen because you have to know who the guy is because he's, like, important to the plot, but it would be, like, really boring just to have somebody, like, telling you about it. So there's just, like, a split screen where there's, like, a TV, like, with a news thing, like, kind of talking about him a little bit, and then, like, in the other side of the split screen, you have John Travolta, like, doing, like, with his analog... sound recording equipment and everything, and him, like, writing names on tapes. So it's just, like, it's a good way of, like, keeping visual interest and also having, like, exposition, but it also has interesting stuff going on, so you're not, like...
Yeah, there's something about it almost kind of like a moving storyboard thing out of a comic
book. Yeah, it is kind of like that.
Imagine you had a storyboard of a comic book moving, but there's no borders between them. It's merged into the same image. It was a great effect. I didn't really see stuff like that until later, 90s.
Yeah, it's like, now that you think, I'm sure somebody can, like, think of maybe an earlier example, but I do kind of feel, well, I think that the reason a lot of people like De Palma so much is because of these visual stylistic, you know, and I think, you know, I think a while back before, you know, people really got appreciation for him, they said, oh, he's just like a Hitchcock. He's just ripping off Hitchcock or whatever, which he did take a lot of things from Hitchcock, but he's got his own thing going on. I mean, he's really got his own, like, style going on.
Yeah, definitely.
But actually, one of the shots, and I don't know if you were awake during this, but one of the shots that a lot of people talk about in this movie is that there's a point where Jack, he realizes that, you know, the tape that he made, like the recording that he made of the gunshot and all this other stuff, and all of his other tapes, like in his library, have all been erased. And there's a great shot where the camera, it just, like, goes 360, like, around the room. And it's not focused on him. He's just, like, running around going, oh, shit. And he's, like, running out the door over there. And he's, like, going through this shit over here and pulling everything off. And then the camera is just kind of, like, spinning around and around the room. Like, not fast, but it's just, it really, really, like, ups the tension. And it's kind of, like, mirroring his panic at, like, discovering that all of his shit has been erased. And now he doesn't have any proof anymore. And it's just, like, a really, really great shot. I feel like that's the one that a lot of people bring up.
Yeah, no digital. It's all practical analog effects.
Yeah, this was 81.
Yeah.
This was 81. So, yeah. So, as it turns out, so he made the audio recording, obviously, of the gunshot. And he's like, I'm convinced that it's a gunshot. So, that wasn't an accident. It was an assassination because the guy did die. So, he's trying to, like, get this, you know, out to the public or whatever. And then it turns out that Dennis Franz's character, who's kind of like a sleazebag, and you also find out later he's, like, associated with Nancy Allen's character, Sally, he was actually at the bridge, and he took film of the accident. And he sold it to a magazine, and the magazine printed it, like, frame by frame. So basically what John Travolta does is he cuts out all the pictures, and then he shoots them all, and he makes, like, a film, and he matches it up with his sound that he recorded. And when he shows the whole thing back, you can very clearly see that there's, like, a gunshot, like, coming from the bushes, like, near where the car is. So he's basically trying to, like, go to the press, and he's trying to go to the cops, and it's, like, nobody wants to hear it. And there comes a point, too, where both him and Sally are, you know, obviously going to be in danger because this is an assassination attempt, and they wanted it to look like an accident. So the fact that he knows about it and that he won't shut up about it means that he's going to be kind of in the crosshairs. So you also have John Lithgow's character, who is kind of like, he's not really a serial killer. I guess he's more like, well, I mean, technically he's a serial killer, but he's kind of like, I guess they would call him like a fixer. Like, he was the guy that was supposed to be doing all this shit, like, in the background. And so once John Travolta's character and Nancy Allen's character, like, start being troublemakers, and it's clear that they're not going to, like, shut up about this whole assassination thing, then he's kind of like, he's like, well, I need to step in. And
he's a political operative. the guy that you hire to fucking take care of shit and to fucking frame people and fucking make other people look innocent.
He's also great in this.
And he ends up
killing like a bunch of other people too, like to make it look like, because he's like, well, I got to kill, you know, Nancy Allen at some point. So he's like, I'm going to kill all these other people like in a real serial killery kind of way.
Yeah.
So it'll look random, you know.
Dudes like this actually exist. They come out of the military and then they become police. Then they go become private investigators. Then they work for security firms that do this fucking weird shit. And they got training and everything. There's teams. Some of them are propagandists, and then they got other guys who know everything about forensics, and they know it's how they suicide people and do shit. And it's not just here. This is a global phenomenon. Governments use these guys, and political parties use them.
Yeah, and so like I said, this movie in a lot of ways, it's a thriller, and it kind of has like a big time like a giallo influence to it, like especially in the visuals, and in there's kind of like a little bit of a murder mystery type of thing going on, but it also homages a lot of the 70s like political conspiracy type theories.
Yeah.
Or movies rather, where, you know, like what was the one that we did not
all
too
the president's
long?
Men,
like All the President's Men, like, and like
Three Days of the Condor, the one they where they faked going to the moon.
Yeah, that's
that was
right.
A good one. What was that called?
That was a good one. Yeah.
Capricorn 1.
Yeah.
Like, OJ was in it.
Yeah, well, because in the 70s, like after Watergate, particularly, like in Vietnam, that whole debacle.
Well,
so
Kennedy
so
assassinations.
That too.
That whole
so going back
thing.
Yeah, because all those assassinations that happened in the 60s, and then, like I said, so people really, I mean, in the 70s, it was a million of those kind of like political conspiracy theories.
They're questioning the reality that's fed to them now. They're going like, wait a minute, hold on. Are the institutions? Are they telling us the truth? No.
And well, what's interesting about this movie, though, is that it has kind of like that DNA in it of like the political conspiracy theory, like, you know, movie. But it also has like a thriller, type. Like,
it's because it's told from the point of view of just the average Joe having to go through it, so you get his eye view of it.
Yeah, he just happened to be there when the shit happened, and he just happened to be the kind of person that it's like, hey, I'm not going to shut up about this because it's the truth.
Drawing a parallel between this and 3 Days of the Condor, or is it 5 Days or 3 Days? The book is 5 Days of the Condor.
I thought it was 3 Days.
3 Days of the Condor. Yeah, Robert Redford. You're drawing a parallel. Yeah, it's a lot like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a lot like that.
Well, there was a lot of these kind of movies, like I said. There was a lot of these kind of movies, like in the 70s.
Yeah. And the Condor is one of the best spy movies. That's one of like an American James Bond type movie, but better, more realistic. You got, I'm going to give it a shout out right now. Go check out fucking 3 Days of the Condor.
Yeah, we reviewed that one a couple months back. I feel like, but yeah, I mean, if you like 70s political conspiracy thrillers, but you also like giallo style murder mystery thrillers, then this is kind of like a good amalgamation of those two things. And I kind of feel like too, I don't want to spoil the end. But I will say that, man, does this thing have a bummer ending. Mm. It is a bummer ending. Well, and I had forgotten about, because like I said, I remembered like the first act of the movie, and I kind of remembered a little bit of the plot and like some of the scenes, but I didn't remember what happened at the end. So like when I was watching it last night, I was like, fuck, man, that was fucked up.
It is, like you said, it is, the movie's 1981, but its DNA is more 70s. Mm. And a lot of those movies from the 70s had ambiguous endings, like Bullet. Another good one. Bullet, the ending of Bullet was, you know, the good guys really didn't win. They made it, but not really. It's that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so I guess this is kind of right in line.
Yeah,
with,
and this,
I'm just,
same thing with 3 Days of the Condor. Yeah, they made it to the fucking New York Times. But can you trust the New York
but
Times?
But now, well, now what? It's is anything going to come of it?
Right. It's something like that.
The thing about this movie, too, is that what I was going to say, it's like not only like a political conspiracy thing, but it's also a little bit of a meta commentary on movie making itself. You know what I mean? And I think that's why he kind of like made the little joke of like opening it with like, hey, here's this cheesy B horror movie. And then 3 or 4 minutes later, pulling back and being like, just kidding. We're actually doing this serious movie. But I think that there's a lot, the theme of this movie a lot is kind of like, can you, like, at what point is a movie like real? And you know what I mean? It's just kind of like, I don't know. It's kind of hard for me to like articulate, but he's so insistent that this is the real thing. But it's like everybody is basically like shitting on it because all of the evidence that he has, like they're erasing it. Like they're getting rid of, like they erase his tapes and they steal his shit. And it's just like, they're trying to discredit him. But he's just like, So it's almost kind of like making a comment on what's the line between truth and unreality, like even in the movies or even like in real life. So I think it's almost kind of like a meta,
yeah,
a meta kind of statement in that way too, which I think, I mean, De Palma did that like a lot in his movies, I feel like.
There was something about this movie, though, it kind of reminded me. What's that director that you really like that did Lost Highway?
David Lynch.
Almost kind of like David Lynch mixed with Spielberg, almost. Kind of had a weird...
Because
you had... maybe that's not a word. There's just a certain feel that I got with it. Because Spielberg had a very mainstream feel to me. And then Lynch was totally off the fucking wall. And this was kind of had elements of both. It was a very mainstream, accessible movie, but it kind of had the artistic qualities of Lynch in a way, with those weird screenshots and the good angles. I think Lynch goes overboard, though.
Stuff, like I said, he's very much into like images of the subconscious and like nightmares and things like that.
It almost kind of reminded me of Oliver Stone. He kind of felt like an Oliver Stone movie too.
Yeah, a little flashier.
It's a good movie. I want to see it again because I missed a lot of the plot part, but the quality part of it, I got a good idea that this is a very good quality movie. I was really getting into it, and I just fucking pulled off into Sleepland, and I came back. I missed it, and then I saw the end part, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And the end did look like something right out of 3 Days of the Condor. Now to talk about it. More stylish. But
that
kind of movie.
I mean, this has got style for days. Pretty much all the shot compositions are really creative, but not in a showy.
Yeah,
like I said,
Lynch does it, but he almost overdoes it. But he has to because he's trying to trip you out, and he's trying to fucking tell something almost kind of metaphysical or symbolic. This is more grounded in reality than Lynch, but it had a real good feel to it.
It's very giallo-esque in the shot compositions and in the lighting.
Yeah.
I really, really like all. Yeah, it's very colorful, like red lights and green lights and neon
and
stuff like that. And I really did like too a lot of the close-ups that he had. Almost, I don't want to go so far as to say like it fetishizes the machinery, like the sound machinery.
It kind of was though.
Like these really like loving close-ups of them with these pretty red lights on them.
Everything
and shit
looked
like
important.
That. Yeah,
and it looked important and iconic. Even the front of that car, when they were in the hotel, in the front of the hotel room that they rented was all glass. They got him with that sound equipment, and then off to his left is the front end of his car, that big old fucking grill. Remember that?
Yeah.
Even that looked like it was important. You know, like everything is epic. It's just real good.
Yeah, everything in this looked
real good shot composition. There's another movie that visually, it keeps coming to my mind. I can't remember what the name was, but it just has that good, like you said, real colorful, contrasting textures like chrome up against the damn tiles. You know what I mean? You had the tiles from the inside of the... You just got to see it.
Yeah.
Tiles inside the hotel room, and then that chrome bumper with that grill. He's just trying to get as much optical cool shit into the shot as possible. And it's just right. It's good. Real good.
Yeah. And so, you know, like I said, you have the whole, like, political conspiracy thing. You also have a little bit of a serial killer murder mystery type thing with the fixer guy, John Lithgow. And, you know, you also have a little bit, I guess, because they kind of give, like, John Travolta, like, his character's backstory a little bit about how he used to work for the police and he used to wire guys because he was, like, a sound person. Yeah. And how that kind of, so it's almost like a little mini crime film like in there as well, like with his backstory.
Yeah, I like the fact that he included his backstory, that he had a military and police background, but in the support units. He was not a hands-on guy.
Yeah.
So that's good because now his character does have an understanding, a situational understanding of what's going on. He does have a chance to get this shit done, you know, because he's at least aware of what happens.
Yeah.
So he's not a total fish out of water, but partially.
Yeah.
Which is the same in a 3 Days in the Condor. That guy was writing or reading spy novels and putting all the ideas into a database that spy agencies were using. So when they came after him, he kind of had the source material, but he wasn't a spy.
Yeah. He had just read a lot.
He just read all the spy novels. Right, yeah. He just read all the spy novels, but he wasn't a spy. He didn't physically have the skills, but he was able to execute it.
Yeah.
For the first time.
Which, so. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, yeah, like you said, it's kind of like this, where he's, like, an everyman.
He's an everyman.
But he does have, like, relevant experience, right, exactly. And he's, like, really smart, and he, like, figures shit out.
That's why he said that he was in the military, you know, and he was also in police in the support unit. Because they said, you were a cop? And he goes, no, not really, I was just part of a commission that, you know, and so he knew police procedural.
Yeah.
Been around there.
He was the guy that helped him, like, you know, wire people and stuff like that when they were trying to, like, get audio for.
So he's not just some nobody who has no knowledge or experience just pulling out of his ass. They have characters like that in the movies, and they're not believable. This guy's believable because at least he knows about it.
Yeah.
You know.
And then he just kind of, you know, through no fault of his own, he just randomly gets embroiled in this assassination plot. And then, like, his ass is on the line. And Sally's ass ends up being on the line,
so,
too.
You know, conceptually or theoretically, he does have a chance of pulling this off.
Yeah.
When an average person wouldn't. They wouldn't even know the basics. They wouldn't even, be able to understand what was happening. They would say, oh, it's not an assassination. Bye. I'm good. That's what the average person would
say. Or even if they did know, like, as soon as somebody said, hey, let's not talk about that, they'd be like, yes,
sir.
Right. Yeah, like, I don't want to get shot.
He wanted to stand up for what was right.
Yeah.
Like a fool.
That was just his character. And they kind of established that it's like, well, that's not what happened, so why should I shut up about it?
Yeah.
And
he didn't take the hint.
And I guess he started to like Sally as and they were just trying
to help her.
Yeah, and he was trying to help her out too. So they kind of like both got in danger. But yeah, I mean, if you really like Brian De Palma's other movies and you maybe haven't seen this one, because like I said, I feel like this one gets a little bit not swept under the rug, but it just gets forgotten about, like, in the context of, like, all his other films, I suppose. But this is, like, way, way better than I remembered, because I hadn't seen it for probably, like, 20 or 30 years. And it's just really, really good. And I think it's easily one of his best thrillers.
One of John Travolta's best roles.
One of John Travolta's best roles, easily. Yeah,
probably maybe the best. Although, you know what I mean, you know, Grease was iconic, but he's mostly musical role. As far as acting, this is, from what I saw, I didn't get to see all of it, but this was, like, his best work.
Yeah, because this is a very, it's a dramatic role. I mean, there's not really any humor or anything like that.
And he's real credible.
And he's great. He's great in it.
Yeah.
Everybody's great in this. It's an all-star cast, and it's just, like I said, it's a great-looking movie. It's just, it sucks you right in, like, the story sucks you right in, and it's just great. It's just great. And, you know, and I'd forgotten how great it was. So if you have HBO Max, you can watch it on there for free. I'm sure it's probably streaming somewhere else. I believe Criterion also released, a really like a special edition of it maybe last year or early this year, and the cover of it looks really nice, so you know you can go that route if you have the money, because I heard there was like a lot of really cool special features on there. But if you've seen it, let us know what you thought about it in the comments, what's your favorite Brian De Palma movie, stuff like that, and we will see you guys again on the next retrospective. Bye.